Committee will come to order. Good afternoon. Meeting for the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee for May 13th, 2010. The agenda's been previously distributed. Are there any additions, corrections, deletions from the agenda as presented? If not, if there's unanimous consent, we'll accept the agenda as presented. Hearing no objection, the agenda is approved. We also have the minutes of the April 8th meeting. If there are any questions or corrections to the minutes, now would be the time. If not, I'll ask if there's unanimous consent to accept the minutes as presented. Hearing no objection, the minutes are accepted as presented. That brings us to our principal agenda items, beginning with the safety report. Mr. Sarles.
Jim Daugherty, Chief Safety Officer, will be giving that.
Good afternoon, Mr. Daugherty, and welcome. I think this is your first time in this office before this committee.
Thank you. And yes, good afternoon. It's an honor to present to the board committee today in what I know will be a long-lasting relationship and commitment to improving safety of our employees and the riding public. By partnering with each of the board members, the TOC, FTA, our labor unions, and all 10,000-plus employees, we will continue the rebuilding that has already begun in establishing a strong safety culture in the area of safety at Metro. It is a challenge that I fully accept and will not rest until we have achieved our goals. Over the coming months and years, I look forward to working with all of you and sharing in our successes. This time I'll begin our safety actions update. We've provided our submission to the FTA audit that yielded 10 findings to Metro and 5 others that were addressed to the TOC, but also directed to us, or addressed the TOC and directed towards us. That report was submitted just April 29th, actually a few days early from when it was due. We will begin our next internal safety audit as part of our plan beginning on May 17th. The next TOC, or Tri-State Oversight Triennial Safety and Security Review, is scheduled to begin in June. As part of the corrective actions to the FTA's special audit recommendations, we will begin training of our safety staff and others within Metro in various courses offered by the Transportation Safety Institute, sponsored by the Federal Transit Administration. The first course actually begins on May 24th and wraps up in September 2010. We will be hosting the Transit System Safety course, May 24th through the 28th, the Instructors course for rail trainers, June 22nd through the 25th, Effectively Managing Transit Emergencies, June 28th through July 1st, Transit Rail System Safety, September 13th through September 17th, and then a special or a custom course that TSI has put together for us is the current trends in transit rail system safety. And right now, it's tentatively scheduled for July 12th to the 15th. That may slip a week as they're trying to get instructors together. And lastly, we are hosting the Transit Rail Incident Investigation, August 30th through September 3rd. And another special course is the FTA's Track Inspector course that they are holding 3 2-day courses for us that will also be coming up between June, actually the last part of June. So we're working on getting that all together. And then we're currently on the corrective actions. We're averaging about 9 a month. The general manager's goal is 10. My goal is certainly as many as we can, and at least 10 to actually wrap up any of the open corrective actions that we have. So we're going to work aggressively in closing out all the corrective actions. The current corrective actions, as you can see, there's 15 open actions. From the 2010 FTA audit, that was that special audit that I mentioned, 10 directed to Metro, 5 related to Metro, directed to TOC, and we have a roll in. We have 4 open corrective actions remaining from the Tri-State Oversight Rail Worker Protection Audit, and actually just this past week we have a draft Roadway Worker Protection Manual that we hope to begin training shortly. There are 20 open corrective actions from the 2007 triennial audit remaining, 2 open corrective actions from the 2004 that both deal with configuration management, looking for basically blueprints of our signal rooms and our substation rooms. So we are also going to work on closing those out as well as the others. 56 corrective actions from a variety of other sources, and those other sources include APTA peer reviews, the NTSB, our own internal safety audits, and things along that line. The National Transportation Safety Board has 4 open ongoing investigations that we believe a couple of them should wrap up shortly. The February 12, 2010 Farragut North with a signal overrun, January 26th, unfortunate, the Rockville Shady Grove accident, the November 29th, 2009 West Falls Church collision, and then the unfortunate June 22nd Fort Tolan.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question?
Does that conclude your presentation?
Unless that would conclude my report, unless you want to go into the statistical data that I'm happy to do.
Questions. Let me first ask you. You are familiar, in the last time we met, we talked with representatives of the TOC here. We talked about getting, there was actually an action taken by the board, with which you may be familiar now, directed a sort of common instrument to report across the various investigations and their status. And I didn't know what the status of that was. Mr. Charles, I'm sure, knows what I'm talking about, but since you weren't here, I didn't want to presume.
How was that the last? Safety at the last committee meeting?
2 weeks ago. Yeah.
That went on when we were in another meeting. So
no, this was we had the conversation. Oh. The idea was that there was going to be a common reporting instrument so that we could see in one place.
Oh, yes. I'm
now
sorry.
You know what I'm talking about?
Connect. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. And that's being put together. We're almost there.
So I was wondering, and again, I trust that Ms. Dougherty is the person who's now going to be responsible for this. Do we have an idea of the time frame in which we will see the first edition of that instrument? I realize it's a little unfair for you, because I haven't got here, but
you should have it next week.
We should, as far as that, we do have certainly a listing of all the open items, so I think we could refine it and have it to you, if I could say, in the next one to
okay, well, let me just, you know, direct your attention to the action that the committee took, and then the board took subsequently, a motion by Mr. Giancola at our previous meeting, because this relates to reporting not only to this committee, but to other entities and to and across the Inspector General. That was one of the things that was going to be coordinated, so that we have a common instrument so the Inspector General can comment on things based on the same reporting format. So everybody would be able to look at it and kind of know where things stood going forward, because that's part of the issue with having had a lot of open cases is nobody really knew that. Nobody ever saw them. So we want to ensure that in the future, everybody has a common understanding of it, exactly what's being dealt with, the rates that are being dealt with, where they stand. So I want to at least hear something about that at our next meeting. I mean, if you don't, hopefully you'll be able to have it together, but whatever it is, I want to, you know where we stand with that.
We will get that for you, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Giancola, then Mr. Benjamin, Mr. Lynn.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Dougherty, the NTSB has these ongoing investigations. You kind of alluded to a couple of them are going to be completed soon. And do you have any time frame on some of these? And I don't know whether you know the answer from your previous jobs, but maybe Mr. Downey could elaborate. How long does it take them to complete their reports? It seems like it takes forever.
It does, right?
Forever. They do a very thorough job.
Typically a year, sir, is the normal basic guideline. That.
But you indicated there were some shortly, and I just wanted you to elaborate on that.
There has been, mentioned that some of the NTSB reports, I have a great working relationship with the NTSB, and I understand that they are being asked to accelerate some reports, not just at WMATA, but at other transit agencies. So I'm
Mr. Benjamin.
I just want to make sure I know what I'm looking at here. If I understand correctly, when an audit or a review gets done of some sort, there may be a whole series of findings. And those findings then require us to file corrective action plans, right?
Yes, sir.
These are the corrective action, or the actions that are part of a corrective action plan. So each corrective action plan may have a number of items in it.
Yes, that would have to be closed out.
Do we have outstanding correction action plans at this point, corrective action plans? Or are those all cleared up? That was one of the things we were trying to clear up.
It's my understanding
The difference I'm asking about is for a while we hadn't even responded to a lot of findings, and we didn't have the corrective action plans filed.
We have corrective action plans all in place.
all in place for everything that's been found. Okay, so these are the actions that result from that set of plans which we've now cleared out. And these actions, some of them may have just been defined fairly recently, and some of them may be things that take a long time to do, like replace the 1,000 series rail cars. Okay, so there's a reason why there would be as many of them as there are right now.
On the comprehensive report that was requested by resolution, we're working on that right now. It's a combination of working with TALK and defining a very common report, common language, not to make it too complex, and we're working with our IT department to help do that. It's in the planning stages now. We'll get back to you as soon as possible, I'm hoping, with that report, or at least an update on where we stand. Right now, it's a very comprehensive hodgepodge of reports. Don't want to inundate you guys with tons of paper or the IG or anyone else.
The whole idea is to have something fairly simple.
Yes, and that's what we're trying.
And we'll look forward to hearing about that in the next meeting then. Thank you. Mr. Willie.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious as to the nature of the six TSI courses that we're going to have conducted on our property, and also some indication of staff members, not by name, but by either category, that will be attending those courses. And is it going to be both documented, their participation as part of some sort of certification, and is it also kind of required attendance as part of their safety requirements for participating in running our system?
Currently, we are have safety and operations staff attending the courses, and yes, upon successful completion, an individual is certified for that particular course or receives a certificate of successful completion. And the way TSI is set up, and being a staff instructor for TSI, there are quizzes and there's a final exam, and you have to have a minimum score in order to receive the successful completion certificate, and we expect everyone should pass.
I'm familiar with TSI, but I was asking what were the specific six courses, if we can have that information.
Sure.
The specificity of the courses. And is the attendance a required part of our staff? I mean, is this just a course offering that will be nice for people to attend, or this is a course offering that we're requiring people to attend?
They'll be required to attend. The only downside is the maximum capacity per class is 30. So we are, we're pretty much limited to the 30, although the three classes on a track inspection, that gives us an opportunity for 90, I guess. Ann is coordinating the TSI courses for us. And I don't know, did you want to add something?
So, I mean, if you want the details on the focus of the courses and who's attending, the first one is transit safety security. All of them are...
You can just submit them to the committee, be fine.
Okay, that's fine.
You can provide the information to the board secretary's office. She'll see to it that it's distributed to members.
Yes, sir, we will do that.
Thank you. Further questions? If not, we'll go on to our next item. Thank you very much, Mr. Crowder.
Thank you.
The next item is next bus performance. Will Mr. Recko be making this presentation?
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr.
Yes, good afternoon. I wanted to come before the committee and give you a six-month update on the NextBus performance, update you on the ongoing efforts to improve NextBus performance, talk about some of the current challenges and some of the success stories. The next chart, the next page, shows you a gradual increase in usage by our customers of NextBus. I think, as you can see, the numbers are rising significantly, and most importantly, that the majority of the contacts with NextBus are through the website rather than trying to talk to a person. So we're very pleased that the customers are seeing this as a tool that is useful and that the website is a good way for them to get the information for their travel on Metro Bus. The next page, I think, speaks to customer complaints, but most importantly, when you look to the right side of the chart for the months of January, February, and March 2010, we had $1.5 million uses of
$1.5 million uses,
and only 148 complaints. So I think even though the complaints are listed to the left, I think the important thing is there are very few complaints, the customers are happy, and the customer usage of the system are increasing. The next page is an internal document that we use to track many of the details of NextBus, and we have 9 bus facilities. We've divided them into 3 districts that are managed by Mr. Jones, Cannon, and Ann Carey. And under each of the districts, there are 3 bus garages, and we meet biweekly now to track the predictability that the buses are providing on their from their garages. We're talking about the on-time performance that is provided by each of the garages. We go on and we discuss details regarding operator logon and are continuing to work internally with, again, biweekly meetings with our IT department, with our rail system repair folks that work on radios, doing everything that we can to increase the predictability and, again, working on on-time performance. There are a lot of issues to make predictability work. The bus has to be assigned to the correct route, to the correct block. The operator must log on when he gets on the bus, must log off when he gets off the bus. All of the components within the bus must work. The antenna must work to transmit the information to NextBus, and NextBus must be able to transmit the information to the customer. So as predictability, our goal is 92%. We're challenged at 78% and trying to improve upon that. I'm not sure that we're going to make 92%, but we're certainly going to make improvements. While we're dealing with some of the issues, we are making the radio system is relatively old. We are making some. We've changed out all of the antennas on the buses to ensure the transmittal of the information. We're working on upgrades to the systems as quickly as we can, and some of those things are in place over the next few weeks. But even if everything is working, on the bus, everybody is logged in under the NextBus system. If a bus doesn't move, it gets pulled every 2 minutes. And if the bus doesn't move, it quits predicting until the bus actually moves. So if it's caught up in a traffic jam or something and it isn't able to move, then it drops off of the predictability. If there is a detour and the bus is more than 160 meters off route, it no longer is able to predict because that is the schedule that's and the route that's in the system. So there are things that can happen, and especially in this area with parades, with events, detours, the convention center during the nuclear event. Those things will reduce our ability to predict. So, again, everybody is working diligently to get at the highest level of prediction possible, and we believe that the system is being well received by the customer. And on the last page, I just want to indicate that in the winter, during the storm, some of the highest usage days were when it was snowing. So even though there wasn't a great deal of service out there, people were not standing on the corner necessarily waiting for their bus. They were checking the website or making a call, trying to determine whether the bus was coming. So we think that's a great use of the tool and is part of our advantages to show people that they can get predictability and they can get reliability and when their bus is coming, without having necessarily just to stand on the corner and wait. So I'd be happy to answer any questions as we continue to try to improve this system for our customer.
Mr. Giancarlo.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I'm delighted that the system is up and running, and it's almost there. And I guess that almost there is some of my questions. You were talking about the issue of when a bus is stopped, it just drops off the system. Does it actually report there's a delay and the bus has stopped? Does it actually say that?
No, it actually just quits reporting. I believe the bus kind of drops off the system.
Do we need to maybe say there's been a delay? You know, I mean, in other words, have a report that says we can't predict it because it's stopped.
Right.
Or there's a delay.
Well, again, as we develop the system, we're trying to develop ways of communicating with the customer anything that we can as it relates to the progress of the bus. And if it's not making any progress due to a major accident or event, we're going to try to
There's no way to program it to say it's been stopped and there's a delay, even though we may not know what the delay is. That's a question
get as much information out to the customer.
It relates to another question along those same lines. It's probably the same reason. when someone calls NextBus, and the DDOT staff gave me this question, so I'll refer it to them as well if I need to, but if someone calls NextBus and asks for information on a bus route that's not necessarily operating at that time of the day, it basically tells the customer there's no information available. So it doesn't really say, you know, by the way, this bus op, you know, the
it's
report
not running
doesn't
at
say
this time of the day.
Normally operates at this time, and, you know, that's all we can tell
well,
you.
That certainly needs
so it
to.
doesn't tell you that. Okay. Is there plans to kind of become more sophisticated along those lines and do that?
Trent Dong is our director of technology, much closer to NextBus, and has been with it from the beginning. Trent, can you?
Yes, sir. Yes, we can put it into place, but there's a lot of work for that. And for instance, a bus breakdown on the road, and they stop, as Ms. Jack requires said, and stop predicting, and how to tell that to the customers. We actually was looking into that. There's a lot of manpower and the resource needed to put to work, but technically it's doable.
Okay, so
and I think the answer is
that. Is that where you're going with this? Is that where
I think we're going to try within the resources we have, and if we need more resources, you know, we'll discuss that if all possible, because we do want to try to give as much information to the customer as possible on every bus that's in service. Or in your case, the bus that actually there is no buses in service based on
that
schedule.
Or that time of the day when
correct.
You're calling. To what degree is NextBus being used by supervisory personnel to manage on-street bus operations, or is it connected at all?
It is. We have laptops in our cars, in our supervisory cars, to where they can track NextBus reliability and whether the operator's logged on, what the status is of that bus, and it helps them to assist them in managing the people that they're responsible for. That's just something that has happened in the last couple of months.
So buses are starting to group together. They can say, well, we're going to spread them out some more?
They can see that, and they can address that.
All right. Are they doing that?
They are doing that.
All right.
And one of the things we're doing is continually train the service operation managers and the superintendents and all of the aspects of NextBus that are advantage to them to manage the system.
The last question I have relates to there have been reports on the poor quality of the interactive voice response component of NextBus. What can be done to improve the voice recognition and service quality? And I don't know the specific cases, but I know this has been reported to me by DDOT.
And neither do I, so.
I think you're referring to the IVR, the
yes.
customer service mainline.
Yep.
Yeah, I noticed that sometimes the background noise is, you know, can, because that's a voice activated, if whatever happened in the background can affect that. We can talk to the customer service department and try to test different things to make it more, less sensitive.
Do we do that in-house or is it done by a provider?
I think it's done by provider.
Okay.
I don't know the name, but
I would suggest maybe you get with the DDOT staff and talk about the specifics.
Sounds like noisy places too. So.
Well, yeah, no, I can see where if you're calling in and you've got a lot of background noise, but I'm
that's
just a little concerned.
Call in, so it has to work.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank
well,
you.
Well, again, work in progress, and we'll
yep.
be coming back to you with a further report and hopefully improvement.
Yeah, sure.
The functionality that we're discussing that currently exists in NextBus, is that what we were told when we purchased the package, that's what it included? You know, these were the notifications that would be available, and that's what we paid for by the provider, and that's what we're getting?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So any additional functionality that we may want to have, do we have to go back to the provider, and they and therefore have to reprogram that and expand the functionality?
Yes, sir. Actually, we dedicate some part of the funding for the first year. So we set aside to make modification to fit our need. Right now, I have something in proposal right now to make some changes, improve it. That's mostly on the management side. As Ms. Jack Ricard said, the supervisors, they need that information to improve performance. That's what we're working on right now.
So, but one's performance and one's additional functionality. But you have money programmed within the contract to ask for those additional functionalities to be performed by the contractor?
Yeah, we did that, but mostly, as I said, on the management side, not to the customers.
Okay.
Not new features to the customer. We just want to improve the service.
Okay.
From the
so new features, you would then need to put more money into
yes.
a contract in order to provide those new features. So some of the things that's been asked that is not within the scope of what you currently have would require additional resources.
Yes, sir.
I think we'll have to evaluate that as we go along and try to make an assessment as to the value of that and request the funding.
Some of the additional functionalities that you may want, and it's also being asked, is anybody else who currently are using the same provider with NextBus have things that we don't have?
I don't know which one you're specifically in mind, and
I don't have anybody specifically in mind. I'm asking you.
Yes, there's some other agencies using, for instance, a new service like text messaging or something we're not currently using. But this is just one example. But we have the most features everybody else using is the web or the phone calls, which is the most popular feature.
So is the question, Chicago CTA and Muni in San Francisco has this service. I think if the question, I understood the question to be, do they have components that we don't have?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to evaluate with those. I'm not sure if we've made the contacts to see if we have these.
And I wasn't suggesting that I know that they do.
I was
just raising the question because also, some of which has been asked here, additional functionality, maybe there's somebody else who's already used it, has that we, we want more notification where buses are delayed. Maybe somebody else may be already utilizing this service.
We do want to understand that there are challenges in getting this system up and running. We're working on that. Certainly we'll try to add any aspects that we can.
I understand your challenges, and I commend you for what you've accomplished. This is not to belittle that. I'm only raising about future and next.
We'll look into it.
I can't imagine why this is, but I couldn't help but notice that the one garage with the worst statistics in your performance was Montgomery on both statistics. Any insight there?
Well, again, we run this report once a week. This just happens to be the sample that we used for this. We're seeing improvement in all of the garages. I don't know of anything specific with Montgomery that is an issue. Obviously, traffic in the Montgomery County is a challenge to provide public transportation for an on-time performance aspect. But from a predictability standpoint, to my knowledge, the fleet is working as well at Montgomery in most cases. The operators are logging on at the same percentages as the others, and this might just be a blip for this week.
So you're saying if you looked at it some other week, it might be different?
Yes.
Could you take a look and just see if this pattern?
Thank you.
Come back to you.
I have a different concern about this. Let me say first that I really do think that, yes, technology is complex and learning to use it always involves adjustment. I think that NextBus has been one of the best things that we've been able to do here in really all the time that I've been, well, not just that I've been a board member, but that I've been a user of Metro. I mean, to me, it's one of the things that's greatly improved my quality of life. And I think that over time, and we do see the usage rising, as you showed in your first chart, it's going to be a big factor in getting more people to use public transportation. It also helps some of the other problems we have because, for instance, the congestion issues, it creates alternatives. People like me are in situations now all the time where we can choose to use the bus instead of the rail because it could be advantageous to do so. And it used to be, I'll give you the simplest example I can. My office is at Courthouse. I'm on the Orange Line. I do that all the time. If I'm moving somewhere in the corridor, it's not necessarily better to take the train than take the bus. Because if I'm going a short distance, why go all the way down in and come all the way back up? In some situations, the bus actually takes me closer to where I might be going in, say, Ballston. But before NextBus, I would hardly ever look to take the bus because I don't know when it's coming. And I have to have some idea where I'm going to get where I'm going to go. And I'd take a route that might take me longer because of the relative certainty. Now, I'm at my desk. I right away look to see when's the next Orange Line train coming, which is, relative because the frequency is high in the rail system, so that's relatively easy. But now I can check on when's the 38B coming or when's the 4 bus coming. And if it's at all close, I'm going over to the bus stop. And so it opens up those kind of options for people in ways that I think are really important. So I don't think we should minimize. This is a great thing that we got implemented system-wide, and really it hadn't been done in the country. A few NextBus and little systems – the implementation of a big system really had never been done. It was done almost simultaneously, I guess, in Chicago, too, with whatever they're doing. I don't know what their results are, but I'd be kind of interested. Because most of the other systems are little places. You know, the Portland streetcar uses NextBus. It's great, but that's a small thing. You know, this is a big system with, you know 1,400-plus buses involved. So that is really significant. That said, though, of course, it has to work with a fair amount of reliability, which is why we're talking about this. But here's the thing that I wanted to get to. How are we defining predictability? And when you know, on this sample table you gave, which shows a little bit how you use it internally, what does it mean to strive for 92% or to achieve, 78.8%? Can you state again, because you said it in previous times, but what is the standard for predictable? What makes you hit the mark here?
Well, predictability means that everything that it takes to the operator to log on, the bus to be assigned to the right route, the right block, that all of the equipment necessary, the radio system, the antenna, the receiving system, next bus, everything is working.
That's all what's necessary.
All of that is needed to do predictability.
Right.
So if all of those things are working, then the bus has to be on the route, and the bus needs not to be stuck in some kind of major congestion to where it can't move, which would then drop it off of the predictability chart.
But what I'm saying, when you're scoring,
right,
this it worked this time or it didn't work this time, it's based on what? It's based on the bus arriving at each point exactly at the moment. I mean, it's got
the predictability means that that it's reporting to that the customer is able to get predictability on 78% of the buses that are operating in the system. We're taking it from a customer standpoint.
It doesn't talk about how accurate it is. It's just the fact that I have it.
Well, we're saying it's accurate. The on-time performance is the reporting of whether the bus is running early or late according to the schedule.
Well, that's really what I meant.
Right.
In other words, but how much? Usually it's within a couple of minutes or something. I mean, what is the standard? I know I've heard
two before. 2 minutes early.
Thank you.
7 minutes.
7 minutes late.
7 minutes late. Okay. That's on time.
Now, I've commented before that I think that there's a little difficulty there because early is a problem, and 7 minutes late is a long way to go on the late end.
It is.
So I wonder a little bit about how we're measuring. I somehow think it's 0 to 5 would make more sense to me. But there's a difference between the failure to be accurately, the failure of the accuracy of the prediction, because it can't be predicted because there's a traffic tile, and the bus is stuck in it. And it'd be nice if we could get real good timely information to people about what's going on. But the fact of the matter is, we can't control that stuff.
Right.
There's a difference between that and the situation where it's not predicting because we haven't done something right. And somehow in, your review of this, I think it's really important that we make that distinction. That, the traffic system ties up. Our buses aren't going to be, the prediction's not going to be as accurate. Hey, we can't do anything with that. But on the other hand, if we have buses not logged on, that's a more serious problem.
Yes.
So, I can tell you that one of the things that I love about this and having this is I can choose which way to, go, and that I think that's really important for everybody. I've had really good luck with it, so, I've had mostly good things to say. But I have also experienced situations, including last week, where it mattered and it didn't work. And, I'm going to tell you this because I think it's, again, an example of what a customer could experience. I'm in a situation where I'm at a point and I know where I have to go. There are three different ways I could go. I have some choices. It's a bit of a walk to any of them, but once I get to them, there are three different stops I could go to wind up more or less at the same place. Which one do I go to? Well, before, it was a complete crapshoot. This gives me the opportunity to say which bus is coming in 10 minutes, which bus is coming in 43 minutes. So I walk to the right place. Last week, I had a situation where on two of the three, I was getting no prediction on either route, on routes that were running at rush hour frequencies. So, that told me something's wrong with the system because
right.
It's saying no prediction at all on a bus that's coming every 20 minutes. We got something going on. So that's the kind of thing that, I want us to try and really work on. If the, traffic slows things down and all that and it's not quite as fast as it's supposed to be, I understand that. There's some things you're never going to be able to fix in here. But I want to be sure that internally you know when something, is happening on that. So, this takes back to the thing. The complaints, I'm glad complaints are low. But we don't want to rely on that as the only indicator. Lots of people, I didn't call in a complaint on that one, right? But what's more important is that you would know without somebody complaining, that you have ways of knowing that we had not working on this bus, not working on that bus. independently, so when you're monitoring what's happening, it's not dependent on somebody calling in.
And I can say that our biweekly meeting primarily is going over reports that tell us which buses are not functioning or what is the problem with the technology or the particular component, and that's what we're trying to address to raise that level of predictability.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? No? All righty. Thank you very much. We'll move on to the bus fleet maintenance comparisons, and you're not doing this, Mr. Aqua?
Phil Wallace, our General Superintendent of Maintenance.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Wallace. How you
doing? Good afternoon. Pleasure to be with you this afternoon to give you a brief update of the status of our overall fleet performance and talk a little bit about the individual powertrain technology reliability. Currently, the Metro bus fleet is the sixth largest transit bus fleet in the country. We slipped since the last time we met with you. We're right behind New York City, LA, Pace, New Jersey Transit, and CTA in Chicago. We currently, as of today, our active fleet is 1,479 buses in the fleet, and our average fleet age is 8.2 years of age. We're currently operating four technologies in our fleet, standard diesel buses, of which within that standard configuration, we do have 261 of them with after-treatment devices on board that actually reduces particulate matter as far as emissions. We are operating compressed natural gas buses, clean diesel technology, and hybrid electric technology. As far as our countdown, as far as the powertrains, the hybrids and the standard diesel, those numbers change on a daily basis as we're in the process of taking delivery of new buses. The actual number as of this morning, we have 275 hybrid buses in service, 461 clean compressed natural gas buses, 117 clean diesel, and 626 of the standard diesel. By sizes of the fleet, we have 111 buses between 30 and 37 feet, 1,279 between 40 and 42 feet, and 89 articulated buses, 60 to 62 feet. Just a little caveat, that extra 2 feet sounds a little unusual. That's the BRT-style buses. Because of the nature of the design of the bus, they're actually 2 feet longer. We're scheduled to operate this fiscal year 49.7 million miles, and our fleet is currently 100% elderly and disabled accessibility. 950 are low floors, and that number, too, goes up every day as we take the older fleet out with the older, less reliable wheelchair lifts and introduce the ramps. New bus procurement status. We are currently on a 5-year contract with New Flyer. The base order and the option order have been completed, and all 203 of those buses are currently in service. And we're in the process now of taking delivery of the option delivery. Currently, as of this morning, we have 38 option buses on the property, and 22 of those are in service. Might note these first 48 are being purchased with stimulus money, and they're all scheduled to be on property by the end of this month. A couple of really important things that are noteworthy. When we take delivery of these 148 buses, they'll be the last of the 2007 certified engines. Moving forward, that's when we'll start using the new 2010 certified engines. So again, it's new technology as we move forward. Another thing that's really noteworthy, in September, when these 148 buses are finally in place here at WMATA, for the first time, we'll meet the board mandate of having a fleet age of no older than 7.5 years and no bus in service over 15 years of age. It's a major, major accomplishment.
Yeah. Before you leave that, I just want to note that, as this chart shows, we're at almost 50% of our fleet with alternative fuels. And
yes, sir.
I think that's quite an accomplishment from where we were 10 years ago.
And even with the older fleet, the 261 buses, we took a proactive approach going to the ultra-low diesel back earlier than it was required and installed those even on the older fleets.
Buses are a lot cleaner than they used to be.
Next, we'll talk a little bit about the overall fleet reliability in general. Currently, fiscal year to date through March, we're at 6,011. And we're slightly behind, 1% behind where we were this time last year. We finished last fiscal year at 5,669. Some of the reasons, and we'll get into some of the subfleet issues, but there was an 8-month delay in the 203 bus delivery that forced us to keep older buses in service longer than anticipated. That's the primary reason but we've had sustained improvement, as you can see, for the fiscal year, and we've plateaued out in January, and we're consistently above the 6,000 mean distance goal. Give you a little sneak peek, we finished April out at 6,270. So at the end of April, we're actually 1.3% better than we were last fiscal year. The next chart I think I must have been doing a little bit of alcohol on that when we put that together. That's a little tough graph to read. But what it's trying to tell you is it's a breakdown of mean distance mean failure by the four primary subfleets. We'll go into that in a little more detail. But it's showing that the hybrids are improved over last fiscal year by 22%, and we've seen degradation in the other ones. That's primarily, again, because we've introduced a lot of the new hybrid buses into service for this last period.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that question when I looked at this chart earlier, that it divides it by type of bus, but, of course, it doesn't tell you the age difference.
Right.
And if you correct for age, that's a lot of the explanation of the performance of any bus, right, is
right.
How old it is.
And we can give we were reporting that what we call the control fleet, apples to apples to apples, the buses, the hybrids and the clean diesels and so on that we purchased between 2005 and 2006, and then we've deviated now, we're giving you all of it. But we can still give you that.
Well, there's a million ways to cut this. And
right.
Show us so much data. But I'm a little bit curious as to what it would look like if we did simply by age, if you compared the fleet across, a year of purchase or something like that, how much variation is, how highly would it correlate with age, basically?
Going back to the way we were reporting, I can tell you our control fleet, 2005, 2006, clean diesel to hybrid to the CNG, that fleet year to date, the hybrids are at 9,321. The control fleet of CNGs are at 12,710, and the controlled clean diesels are at 10,455. So that group of CNG buses is outperforming right now.
Right, and that's of a specific cohort, basically.
Right, apples to apples to apples. They were all purchased in the same timeline, introduced at the same time. So that's apples to apples comparison.
Okay. Well, thank you.
That's good information.
Yeah. With that, our compressed natural gas overview. We've set a benchmark to try to attain 10,200. And in all these benchmarks, you'll see, we've gone back, we've looked at the history of the bus, we looked at the operating duty cycles, we've looked at overall engineering reliability issues and so on to try to put some stretch goals for each of our subfleets. Currently, fiscal year to date, for all of the CNG buses, we're at 8,407. And that's for as you mentioned, Mr. Zimmerman, that's all the model years. That's from 2001 through 2008. Fiscal year to date through March, that fleet has operated over 10 million miles at a cost per mile is at $1.07. Now, that's a direct cost. That's no overhead. That's no infrastructure. That's strictly direct cost, which relates to labor, parts, tires, services, fuel, and lubricants. So that's direct cost through our maximum or automated system. The average miles then is about 23,000 miles for each of those compressed natural gas buses. We currently have four different engine types that we're using in the compressed natural gas fleet. And I think last time I reported to you, the largest fleet is 309 of the 8.3 gas engines. Best engine I've ever seen in my tenure with this organization. That's 37 years. Really? It's phenomenal. That's the good news. The bad news is you can't use it anymore because it doesn't meet the clean air standards. We also purchased 205 John Deere engines about the same time to give Cummins Engine Corporation a little competition. Unfortunately, they've now dropped out of the transit market and no longer offered, and we are having some substantial issues with that engine. Fortunately, they are being covered under warranty, and we're working with our engineering group to resolve these issues. The latest introduction is the ISL gas, of which we have in our new Navi RTX, 22 of those. Major issues with that engine in the industry. We're working really hard with the Cummins folks, engine failures, turbochargers. We think we've got a replacement for that they're going to retrofit in mid-June. There's some EGR issues, but a lot of issues, not only here, but anybody that's using. But we're working hard with that group. In anticipation of moving back to gas in the future, again, we want to work really hard because that's the engine moving forward on Cummins. But we've also got one, and we're getting four more Doosan engines, CNG Doosan engines. It's a Korean engine, but it's manufactured right outside of Atlanta, Georgia. Just trying to, again, make sure we're staying abreast of the technology. And when we do, if we're ready to throw the switch back to CNG in the future, we're going to have something that's going to be reliable for us. So those are the four engines that we're looking at, right, are using right now in the WMATA fleet. As far as our hybrid bus fleet, again, with the model years 2006 through 2009, those are the vehicles that we're taking delivery of now. We've set a benchmark for that fleet of 10,700. Fiscal year to date, we were achieving 10,345. That fleet has operated 5.7 million miles with a direct cost of 80 cents. And again, that's somewhat skewed because a lot of the newer buses now are under warranty, so we're not seeing the fully loaded cost, but they're 80 cents. One thing that we are seeing, though, is phenomenal fuel economy. With the latest program, we're achieving 5.6 miles per gallon on the new hybrid buses. And they're averaging about 22,000 miles per bus. So excellent fuel economy.
What on the hybrid. Diesel typically have?
Pardon?
By comparison, what is a regular diesel do?
The regular diesel, which is next 3.51. So a substantial improvement.
50%.
And that equates to, and we'll talk a little bit about emissions, that also further reduces emissions, the more fuel efficient the vehicle is.
Question, Mr. Benjamin?
Yeah, Mr. Wallace, in the past times, and I may have missed this because I was out of the room for a minute, the hybrids were not working as well, and it was a non-hybrid issue. Is that what's causing this to get back up, the non-hybrid issue has
been solved? Worked through the issues on the first 50 hybrids. Those mm-hmm. product improvements have been incorporated in the new 203 and the subsequent 148. So
we're past those issues.
We think we're past those issues. I mean, they can only get better, yes.
So we're now getting some idea as to what the hybrid performance probably is going to be like.
Yes, in this configuration
in
and for the future.
Okay,
now,
thank you. Okay.
With one caveat, and I was going to talk that a little bit. Again, the diesel engine that we're using to drive the hybrid, we can no longer use that either. But I was going to talk about that when we get to the diesel. Because the current engine now does not meet the 2010 certification. They'll
so
be
we're going to have
some,
another issue when we have to replace.
Well, we're hoping no issues, but we're trying to work through that. But you're going to be introducing SCR technology, selective catalytic reduction technology, where you're introducing a urea substance into the after treatment. It's just, it's new. It's a different technology.
Okay.
This is also introduced into the Doosan CNG engine to meet the requirements.
So they're both going to be going
potentially. There's going
to
be some issues that we're going to be working through. The Doosan engines that I mentioned that we hope to have in later this summer, four of those will be the latest technology, urea. So we'll get some experience under our belts to work
okay.
the kinks out.
Thank you.
On the hybrids, we really have no major outstanding hybrid or any outstanding hybrid reliability issues. We are having a proactive retrofit done on the traction motor unit where they're in now replacing bearings in the systems just for. It's a proactive issue. We saw some things through our fluid analysis program, so we want to address that before we have any catastrophic failures. Clean diesel, which we have 117 in the fleet, 2006. They're ISM Cummins engines. We've operated fiscal year to date 4.2 million miles at a cost of $1.12. We do put a lot of service on those buses. They've averaged 36,000 miles per bus, again, 3.51 miles per gallon. The bad news is, again, to meet the clean air standards, this particular engine, after 2010, will be using the ISL engine. It's just basically the same platform as we're using currently for the CNG and for the hybrid, only we'll now be introducing urea as it relates to hybrid or clean diesel. The only real reliability issue engine-related, we are having some exhaust gas recirculation valve issues. We have finally engineered a fix for that, and we're in the process of retrofitting those on the 117 buses. So that's basically on the clean diesels. This chart here, when we were talking about clean technology, and this is really, really striking. I mean, you can see the drastic reductions in where we've come from 1994 through 2007 and now the latest emissions. I mean, an 83% reduction in nitrous oxides, a 90% reduction in PM. And this is the regulation. This is the requirement of any engine that goes in a transit bus. And we're there. It hadn't been without challenges, trust me. I mean, it's been really, really a task, but we're really, really there. And
these are the two pollutants for which Washington is a
non-attainment
area.
Yes, sir.
So that's why they're
yes,
the ones to be looking at.
They both harmful to the ozone, cause smog, and respiratory issues. So we've come a long, long way with a transit bus. The unfortunate part, if you look at the overall statistics, we need to get more folks on transit buses because we're only a fraction of the overall problem in the area or in the country. But again, a major achievement. With that said, on the next chart, this breaks down, again, particulate matter down to 0.1 grams per brake horsepower, nitrous oxide, 0.2 grams per brake horsepower, non-methane hydrocarbons at 0.14 grams per brake horsepower. So substantial reductions, And these tests and these certifications are done in a controlled engine dyno test. We currently have West Virginia University on our property. They're at our Carmen Turner facility. They'll be with us for about a month. They're doing, and as they've done for the last several years, come in and they're actually doing emissions tests in the vehicle. What we're doing now is we're going back and we're bringing some of the 2005, 2006 buses that we just talked about, see how their emissions are holding up over the life of the bus, and we're also testing the newest technologies, the newest CNG, the newest hybrids, to see what kind of emissions we're actually seeing on a Chasso dyno, which is simulating actual WMATA duty cycle. They actually program into the computer the WMATA duty cycle, and it simulates it. So at the end of the day, we'll have good information for us to make decisions moving forward to present to you, and also for the good of the industry. This is published for the industry's good. And then the engines that we'll be using moving forward that meet the 2010 certification are the CNGs, and you see this, the respective emission certification lines there. Virtually, again, very, very comparable with the after-treatment devices that we're using now. Virtually nothing as it relates to particulate matter or non-methane hydrocarbons, and NOx is extremely close. Still is a slight gap, even though it's not regulated in CO2. Carbon dioxide, which again is an ozone depleter, but we've actually seen in our last dyno testing that in the case of the hybrid, it's the cleanest as it relates to carbon dioxide. Again, because it's equated to the fuel economy of them. The cleaner you're burning, the less fuel you're burning, the less CO2 you're actually output. So, just to preface that, we hope to be giving you some additional information in the near future as it relates to life cycle costing to our general manager and have a discussion on moving forward. But it's really exciting. We've come a long way with the technology. Our standard fleet still out there moving our customers around every day. That's the older buses from 1990 to 2003. They've operated 15 million miles year to date at a cost of $1.35. That's an average of 23,000 miles per year. And 3.47 miles per gallon. Reliability slightly above our target of 4,127.
So when you say $1.35, you mean that's the current cost to run?
That's the direct cost to operate. There's the same criteria, labor, materials, tires.
But right now, that's what the cost is.
Year to date.
The life, that's what's costing this
year. Fiscal
year
to date.
Okay.
All these numbers are.
It costs more to run these because
they're
older and they break down twice as often.
Well, they break down not as reliable, they cost more to operate, and they're putting more pollutants out. So any technology we purchase moving forward, as we get these out, we're going to improve our reliability. That's the exciting thing about September. We're going to, for the first time, have a reasonably aged fleet that's going to give us some decent reliability and clean emissions. Not in the way of benchmarking, because it's really hard to do in this industry, but again, a mean distance between failure year-to-date for us is 6,011. Just doing a little bit of research on the web myself, New York City Transit, using a similar criteria, they're showing 3,379, Long Island 2,531, Boston 9,209, Metro Dade 3,888, Chicago CTA 4,313, and Chicago LA 1,500 mean distance between failures. So any way you crunch it, we think we're doing a pretty darn good job. Our folks have embraced the new technologies. They've worked with us very hard to try to maintain the older fleet. We're looking hard at doing more benchmarking. We know that the National Transit Database, we're doing some work with that. Unfortunately, there's a lag time. We're looking at 2008 data right now. But if you use their data, we're actually right behind New York City using that criteria. New York City is at 6,794. We're at 6,638. And New Jersey Transit, Mr. Sorrells might be interested in knowing, is number three at 6,012. So, again, we feel pretty comfortable that we're never happy with where we're at. We always want to strive to be better. But we think we've got a handle on the technologies. We're ready to move forward. And we appreciate the board's support moving forward to continue with our bus procurement strategy, with our bus rehabilitation strategy, and capitalization of our various maintenance programs. And we really think moving forward, we're going to be able to continue to sustain good performance and even improve it.
Thank you very much.
Your last comments just raised a question I was going to ask. Mr. Sauls is not interested in what New Jersey Transit is doing or done. That's his history.
But this is 08 data.
It's OD. The FTA has announced the availability of some discretionary 5309 bus and bus facility money available for state of good repair. I know we've had some old facilities that we have been looking at, and I'm not sure where we stand in terms of our age of fleet comparatively to others, where we would be competitive in terms of that pursuit. But I do know that we have some historical maintenance facilities that would probably put us in fairly good stead for some of those additional resources. So have we thought about that, or have we lined that up, or is that within our targets?
What we're doing on that pot, as well as another one that's going to be forthcoming, is putting together a list of projects we think might be competitive. And I can't tell you at the moment which will be on the list, but we're looking at it actively.
But we're very excited about that. I think we've come a long way. We've lagged about 1.14 years behind the average fleet age in the industry for the last 10 years. We've caught up now. And now if we need to put some investment in our facilities. I mean, working out 100-year-old facilities is pretty tough.
That's why I'm talking about this window.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Other questions? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Wallace.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks. We'll move to the fleet plans. And I'm not sure whether we should try to do item F or perhaps carry that to our next meeting. I think if we got through items D and E, that would probably be a good day's work. What do you think?
I'd say you're right.
Okay. So given who's here and who's left to do it, let's see if we get through the two fleet plans.
Okay.
Mr. Kubitschek.
Good afternoon. This is a purely just an information item on the Metro Rail fleet plan. There's been a new requirement by the FTA that we're going from a 10-year forecast to a 15-year forecast. So the fleet plan, they have a lot of information that's assembled in them, and it's a very, very it's a very powerful document inside the agency because it draws finance, it draws long-range planning. But with this pushing out even farther, you know, this additional 5 years, we're looking at how it will tie into our capital needs as well as our state of good repair. So while a lot of times these documents just kind of sit around, I just wanted to just kind of get a quick overview on the importance of it. It's going to be out there. It's going to be communicated on, and we're going to be working very closely with the FTA on this. The next slide, please. There'll be some general information in this thing that kind of gives you just a general snapshot of what we have, you know, where we actually stand at with our current configurations of equipment. Go ahead. Next slide. There's also going to be discussions in these newer plans talking about your current challenges, your services, and everything else. So this is the type of information that we would, you know, note at a high level and then, depending upon the requirements, go into greater detail. Next slide, please. Okay, this gets into ridership growth and service expansion. Again, it ties into a planning document, especially with the long-range support that we have from Nat Bottenheimer and his folks. And we really are being asked to really start tying in a lot of other projects that are associated with these fleet plans. In some ways, it's really changing in from a fleet, straight fleet plan, to a fleet and infrastructure plan. Next slide, please. Okay, on this right in here, this is a chart that's been shown before. There's a continued interest in our actual loading and, you know, future growth. For example, this right here shows like a 50% eight-car train graph, and if we were just to stay at this level without any increase into the size of our fleet or our technology, then you can start seeing where areas that we would start targeting where we would really have some very troubled spots on our system. Next slide. This right in here, for example, represents 100% eight-car trains by FY 2020. Again, there are areas that we have to communicate from a planning perspective, technology perspective, or even our overall rail car design, but it's starting to give us a snapshot looking ahead of what we plan today, what we're going to have to address in the, you know, the next 5 to 10 years. Next slide, please. Okay, rail car maintenance needs, generally we're staying with, you know, the same common reference of about 20 to 22%. For us, there's going to be some further dialogue on this because a lot of the information that was put out previously, you know, it's used as a benchmark, but now since WMATA is always going to be in a stage of retrofitting or rehabbing, you know, rail cars, you've got to start accounting for that and going into greater details of the plan. smaller systems or newer systems. Not necessarily you have to really worry about noting that at that present time, but that's something that we'll have to really further mature out as we continue to move forward. Even the looking at the rail car maintenance shop, you know, needs as far as spaces, you know, on your allocation of, you know, your overall fleet size. And it's also going to get into the actual level of detail on our maintenance duty cycles on how often we're actually utilizing these maintenance spaces in a 24/7 platform. Next slide, please. This, for example, gives us a general overview of the stuff that will be going into the plan. And we're also part of this process. We'll be reviewing each of our yard locations for the potential of what we can actually expand the yard and or the shop or the facility. For example, one of the things that was discussed earlier on was the possibility of expanding the Alexandria yard. And that was discussed very heavily. But whenever you look at expanding maybe the yard in one retrospect, it impacts some of the shops, and vice versa. If they tried to expand the shop, we'd end up losing like about 30, you know, spots to actually park equipment. So some areas we're going to have to look at this on a location-by-location basis to help assist on what we're going to be looking forward in the future. Next slide, please. Again, rail car storage, that is a big, big concern on our part. As we get further into this slide, you're actually going to see where we're actually going to show a deficit in the out years. And so shop space, the utilization of that actual pit or and or that lift on a 24/7 platform, but also where do you actually deploy or stage your assets is also very critical. Next slide, please. Okay, rail car storage capacity. This is a slide that I was talking about. Looking out even farther for the example like Dulles Phase 1, you know, Dulles Phase 2. Dulles Phase 1 will completely saturate what we can do at West Falls Church. No expansion out there as far as, you know, it will be 100% built out, pretty much gridlocked like what we have at Brentwood and Alexandria. And as we go to 100% eight-car trains and we look at Dulles Phase 2, we're going to be looking at needing 102 spaces to actually park or stage, you know, rail cars. And with that, we start the discussions of our existing yards, what can we do to expand with them, as well as what we might be able to communicate as we work with Dulles to see what we can do to enhance the existing designs that they have now. So now's the time that we address it. Failure to do so only elevates costs in the future. Next slide. Okay, proposed rail car procurement. Of course, we've discussed this quite a bit. 7,000 series for us kind of falls, you know, very nicely into this because, you know, we are looking for a multi-year plan, you know, moving forward. Now with the other, you know, 5 years or whatever being added, you could see some discussion. We're going to start talking about what we're going to have to do with the, you know, the 2-3Ks or, you know, from a planning perspective or some of the other equipment that we have like the 5,000 series. Next slide. The other thing that we also wanted to be very sensitive to the fact, as I stated earlier, that this is going to be a document that's going to drive some of our capital needs and our state of good repair as a byproduct. Whenever we start expanding this fleet, you know, besides storage, you know, we have to start looking at train control, actual traction power usage, the overall track and structure, you know, the duty cycle at which you're placing on this equipment. We're looking at vertical transportation, elevator, escalator, more people going into this system. What do we do with our existing, you know, our station designs and the technology we're putting there, as well as fare gates, fare machines, the need of these amenities to be added, and also just station design enhancements as a whole, working especially with the planning where we've seen where, you know, maybe changing of some of our designs to actually look at throughput have to be, you know, factored in this as we move forward. Okay, and just overall, just a plan summary. We're working very closely, you know, with the FTA to get this thing established. And again, it ties into our capital needs and our overall improvement program. And from an information item, we just wanted to make sure that y'all were briefed that this type of activity and level of detail is taking place and that y'all were not unaware. Next slide.
Thank you. Let me ask you to go back to slides 62 and 63. Chart showing the congestion.
62 and 63.
Okay, so we'll go to the one before this. All right, so there's the difference between these two are basically how many rail cars you get, right? And whether you can go to 8-car trains, whether
yes.
50%, or whether you have the opportunity to go to 100%. And one thing that confused me about this is if I look at the first two columns, which basically, I assume it says FY 2010. Well, I won't assume anything. That means in the year FY 2010, that's the situation we have right now. It's a baseline. What does that column mean, FY 2010?
The first column, FY 2010?
Yeah, that's not just reporting on what the situation is right now.
Yes, that's
an actual.
That's an actual of at least the representation of what they're looking at from the boarding based on the capacity that we have out there.
But, I mean, we don't have 50% 8-car trains, so
yes.
That's just where we are now.
That's just a baseline.
We have, what do we have, 25% 8-car trains?
Yeah, we're sitting about 25%, but whenever in June, whenever we make our schedule adjustments, we'll sit at about 45%.
You're going to go up some, okay.
Yeah.
The next one is that, again, that is a snapshot of FY 2015, what your estimate the situation will be 5 years from now.
Yes, that's a general snapshot, just an estimate.
Which basically shows yellow-blue getting worse, but nothing else changing very much.
Well, we do have some improvement on the yellow-blue, I guess, on the fourth column there.
I'm sorry. Yellow-blue. Oh, wait a minute. I'm misreading. Yeah, the yellow-blue gets better. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yellow-blue gets better. Orange, red, they just basically stay the same the way they are, which is congested. Orange-blue. Orange stays highly congested, and the others stay congested. That's assuming the additional rail cars that are coming onto service, the additional 8-car trains that you will be able to run, and also allowing for the regular growth that you anticipate.
Yeah, ramping up to like a 50% platform.
So the only change is yellow and blue getting some slight improvement.
Yeah, on the 2020, because the blue line.
Microphone. Thanks.
It's by 2015, the Dallas first phase coming in. That's why we have some new cars coming in, even though we're not approaching the gross car for 50%, but we're adding the fleet for the gross on the Dallas phase.
Well, why should the Dallas affect it, given that that's to carry the people on that line, there's the additional passengers? Why should it affect the performance of the yellow and blue line?
Well, because you have a split. You move some service from
the... Oh, okay. You're assuming the restructuring of the line, which we still have yet to see in this committee, but... Okay, so that's where that gets the improvement. So it isn't even new rail cars.
No.
Okay.
Right. These two charts were actually used in an April 2008 board presentation, which we looked at core capacity. I think one thing that changed in the slide is for 2010, we've actually put in actuals. When we did it back in 2008, there were projections of 2010.
Yeah.
But I think the yellow shown for yellow, blue, and orange dollars are from recent manual ride check counts that actually said we are carrying over 100 people per car on a couple lines. In all the projections, it said as we ramp up to 50% 8-car, you will actually see an improvement on lines, and that was, I think, why the yellow-blue goes to green there. So we do get a little bump in capacity when we roll out the 8-car trains. And then what it basically is saying is growth catches up with that capacity in roughly the 2020 time frame.
Okay. Now, this whole chart assumes some schedule by which you're increasing – by which you're bringing in rail cars. Yes?
When this particular one, I'm saying 2015 through 2025, they're all assuming 50% 8-car trains. The exception is 2010, in which we put actual counts in place.
To achieve what we see here requires a certain assumption about the availability of rolling stock, doesn't it?
That we will have 50% 8-car trains in operation.
So implicit in this is some schedule of delivery of vehicles. Yes, no?
Well, 50% trend is already approved, supposed to be.
Okay, is this all assuming the exact fleet you have today, or is it assuming any change in the fleet?
This is exactly what we do, no changes moving forward.
In the gross number in the fleet?
Yes, this is
that's
just.
The number of cars you have today.
That, yes, this is frozen in time, 50%
although,
eight-car.
The
some of them you can't be assuming, because you're not going to be running roar cars out there, because they're not going to last that long, right? So you must be assuming some replacement.
Oh, replacement.
You're assuming Dulles rail cars.
Mm-hmm. We're assuming currently plus the Dulles Phase 1. That's basically, that's what the replacement.
But there are rail cars that will have to be delivered on the order of hundreds in order to maintain the fleet at this level over that period of time.
Yes. For example, the replacement of the Roar fleet, you know, is in a quantity of 300. And that's why in our options of the 7K series program, you see like 130 for 75%.
So it's assuming the replacement of the Roar fleet and doing something on the 4000s. You got to do something with them between now and 2025. You either got to rehab them or replace them.
That is correct in there, and that's why the 4000 series were included as an option in the 7K.
Right, okay. So that's implicit in being able to achieve this, is that we would, in fact, do something about those rail cars.
Yes.
So now is the question. In the CIP we were discussing this morning, Mr. Sauls, if adopted as it was presented today, with that $5 billion level, including new federal money and new state money, and a sort of maintenance of effort on the part of the region. Is this achievable? Is this in the program? The things that would have to be to do this, do you do in that six-year period?
The CIP includes the replacement of the 1000 series, includes 64 rail cars at Dulles, and it also includes the replacement of the 4000 series.
Okay, so now go to the next slide. Now, this is to actually have things not be terrible, right?
Yeah.
What more do we need to get this? If I want that to be my future and not the last page with all the red.
That's additional 220 gross cars.
Okay.
That's right.
So for those additional cars to get this, is that in the CIP that we were looking at this morning?
In the six-year CIP, I believe it is not.
No.
This is the kind of thing I was talking about, and you need to understand what the difference is, what we're buying, what we're not buying. We have a program before us which does not meet the identified inventory of needs. So we need to start explaining to people what's in, what's out, what you're buying, what you're not buying. So what I'm not buying is this comparatively lower congestion. It still has pretty heavily congested, and I'd note that orange is, you know, what is it? Go back to the last slide, previous slide, 1 second. Okay, so orange is what's showing it's highly congested, and the orange line is really, really packed right now. So, and red is showing as not so bad by comparison, and Mr. Benjamin, I think, will tell me, and Mr. Linton will tell me, they're pretty packed on the red line a lot of the time. So, you know, that's a green, but doesn't really mean life's great at this level here. If we want something that's going to be better, we're not proposing to buy it in the CIP that's in front of us, and that, I think, is important for people to understand. Okay. Others? Questions, comments? Yeah. All right, well, I think that's one good example, but there are going to be a lot of things like that. And I think it's really important to understand the connection between these abstract dollars and the tangible things. Go to that. We have one more to do. Let's see if we can do the bus fleet plan. Thank you very much. And then we'll call it a day.
Okay. All right, good afternoon. We're going to do a run-through on an update of the 2007 bus fleet management plan. As with the rail fleet plan, these have been done in joint effort with long-range planning, operations planning, bus maintenance. This is presenting an overview of our anticipated 10-year Metro bus fleet growth and capacity needs, and this basically focuses on the period covered by our capital needs inventory and the bus fleet needs that were in there. The plan itself will actually look out further to 2025. It serves an important planning document to guide fleet management, garage development. It guides business decisions, so we should be updating whenever we have significant changes and meets FTA requirements for our future bus purchases. The reason we're presenting it today as an information item is really to give you an overview of the concepts and key points from our draft plan. We intend to send out the actual plan itself to board members, and we would like to come back perhaps in July for an actual adoption of the plan. Okay, next slide. On the key assumptions, the plan is organized into three basic parts. The demand for buses is driven by service needs and addressing ridership growth. The supply of the vehicles in terms of particularly meeting its our replacement and rehabilitation cycles, and the maintenance and garage facility needs. And so I'll talk first about assumptions. On the demand side, a key assumption is ridership growth. We've been averaging over the last 5 years about 1.5% a year on bus ridership growth, and that's the 15% of trend base is really over the next 10 years. That's what we would expect to see. We're also adding in 10% additional growth, which was in the priority corridor network plan that Jim Hamry and others have talked about previously. If we fully implement that and extend it, we'd see 25% growth over the 10-year period. And then, you know, the routine adjustments needed to relieve crowding and so forth are included in there too. On the supply side, in prior plans and sort of board standards, we've looked at achieving that average fleet age of 7.5 years, and then also a midlife overhaul, which helps extend the vehicle life to 15 years. On the supply side, we've focused on fiscal constraints that are in the draft CIP, and really just focused on achieving the fleet age and demand. And what that allows is, at the end, we'll show you a chart, which is what the need is for buses, what we expect to supply based on what we know about the CIP, and then also our garage capacity. Next slide. On the garage capacity, the key assumptions are some of the facilities that are currently in project development. We're opening them in order with DC Village under construction with a 2012 opening at 250 spaces. Cinderbed Road would have a potential 2013 opening at 160 spaces. And then Southern Avenue replacement, the 2014 opening, assuming replacing one for one at 103, but if there's a potential if we get more spaces, if we get favorable bids as we move ahead with that project. Also, then moving on to kind of key findings, the fleet plan shows a need overall on demand for basically a 20% fleet expansion, which would be about 300 buses to meet the service demand, ridership demand. That would take the fleet from 1480 or so today up to just under 1800 buses. About half of those expansion buses would be used on the priority corridors and the other high ridership growth corridors, and the other half would basically be used for routine service adjustment seat loss. Under fleet supply, key findings, and again, this is in terms of looking at the funding constraint, without expansion fleet in 2011-2016 and some expansion beyond 2016, we're going to show you what that means in terms of fleet age. In terms of bus replacement, it's getting on a regular replacement cycle of about 100 a year or about 1,000 over 10 years. One change is a shift to more articulated buses, so there's some replacement buses in there, but we also want to increase the share of ARTICs so that we go from 75 today to up to about 145 ARTICs in 2020. Next. These points I'm going to get into a little bit later with the chart, but I think the key thing to look at here is what we need to keep up with demand and basically what we would supply in terms of recent funding. I think a key point is during Metro Matters, we only purchased 25 expansion buses. So I think it's an issue as we move ahead in terms of meeting demand. And third bullet down there is basically if we stuck to our bus replacement policy, by 2016, we'd have an average fleet at 7.3 years and about 90 in would exceed the 15-year growth. If we tried to achieve the demand but basically didn't buy expansion buses, and so we did that by keeping older buses in service, our average fleet would go up a little to 8.2, and we'd have a number of buses exceeding the 15-year mark. Okay, next. And then just in terms of highlights on maintenance, the plan gets into basically how many buses are routinely in maintenance and how much space we need. We maintain 15.6% spare ratio on the bus fleet. Okay, next.
Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Ms. Dunning.
Yeah. Just going back on the gap between funding and need. This is the point that Mr. Linton raised earlier. If we target the opportunity for some additional funding through bus discretionary, and if we can make the case that our base fleet is being taken care of, and this is really for expanded service and expanded ridership, I think we could make a pretty good case.
Yeah. That's good.
we'd have to find the local match to do it.
Right. Just hit on one point on garage, and then I think we'll look at the supply and demand curves together on the same plot. I think it'll show the point you're making there. On the garage capacity, which is the next slide, one issue is if we look system-wide at our garage space, we are very close to capacity on garage space, but it's uneven. And what we're showing here is that the garages in the inner part of the region are basically at or above capacity. The outer ones, including the new West Ox garage, have some capacity. So when you look system-wide, it looks like we have a little capacity, but it's really uneven based on the geography of the region.
Yeah.
And next slide. In terms of the look ahead, today we have 1482, actually this is at June 2009, 1480 today with 1,524 spaces. And that includes the fact that we lost 114 spaces when we closed Southeastern. The planned new facilities will increase storage and maintenance capacity. And then also, as we move ahead with newer garages, we can look at more CNG facility and other things that affect capacity. All right, next slide. This is the summary slide I mentioned. So the top green bar would represent the garage capacity. The middle blue line represents our demand in terms of keeping up with ridership growth and service improvements. And the red would be achieving our replacement goals, but basically being constrained by the current CIP in terms of funding levels. And what you basically see is we're pretty close to capacity on garage right now. With opening of DC Village and Cinderbed Road, we would have some additional capacity system-wide. However, an important point about garage capacity is we want to have a little extra for swing space, particularly if we're trying to do rehabilitation projects. And that's kind of shown as the chart, the curve goes down, that if we're going to do rehabilitation of Northern or Western, potentially having to close those facilities, we're going to need that swing space. If we, reopen those facilities in Northwest, we have a little excess capacity. But as you can see, those lines are awfully tight together as we go forward on the demand side. And then on the red line curve there is basically saying, under one plan where we're constrained, we'd maintain fleet size and then start to expand the supply, kind of keeping up with demands. Okay, issues to be addressed that are basically not accounted for in the numbers that we've been talking about would be what are the impacts of planned expansions of local bus operators and streetcar light rail transit systems. In some cases, the planning is still kind of too in early stages to have operating plans that will let us know the impacts. But the impact of bus priority improvements is something we are looking at very closely, whether it will make the system more efficient as we move forward. And then funding availability is always a major factor, and we started this fleet plan process 4 or 5 months ago, and it, as things have changed in terms of grant opportunities, we've tried to adjust to look ahead to what we can fund. Next slide. So in summary, the plan documents the process and procedures for operating and maintaining the fleet. We've identified gaps between what we see needed for fleet growth driven by demand and what we expect to purchase looking ahead. We're also connecting the garage development proposals with growth projections. And basically incorporated our unconstrained capital needs with our constrained CIP with those two curves that we looked at. Our next steps, we basically want to come back potentially in July to look for adoption of the fleet plan. Of course, looking ahead to exploring other funding sources like grants and exploring opportunities for rehabbing Northern and Western garages. And then also, the plan will be important guidance next time we put our bus procurement contract up, which is expected for 2013 to 2017. Thank you.
Thank you. This plan, perhaps more than even in the previous one, raises the issues that I was talking about with regard to the CIP. In my experience, that whenever there's money tight, the first thing we do is cut something out of the bus program. So we didn't wind up with much in the way for bus and Metro Matters. It was an afterthought to put it in, and then when we wound up tight in money, the first thing we did was, put off buying buses. So I think it's going to, especially when you've laid some things out here, which is particularly useful, about, the constraints on capacity, like on facilities. A couple of the charts here really show that. But we need to line that up with the resources that we're imagining being available so that we can compare the identified need with the reduced program that we're now facing so people can understand exactly, you know, if we came up with additional funding, what would we get? If we don't, what will it cost us? And there's just a whole lot all through here that lays out with it. Mr. Linton.
It also reinforces your justification for state of good repair and the need to go after defining how you meet the criteria for the discretionary bus and bus facility money that's being made available now. So backing it all together, you know, supports your application. So let's go get it.
Other questions? Had enough? Okay, I was looking forward to the farebox discussion, but I think we will carry that to the next meeting. We'll probably have to talk about a few things between now and then. Thank you all very much. Thanks for staying with us. We're adjourned.